Rhodes Radio, ladies and gentlemen. Today's episode is just going to just tickle your ears with absolute delight. I've always had a fascination with my name, Tom Rhodes. I think it's perfect. And through the miracle of the internet, I found out about this wonderful musician, also named Tom Rhodes. And we've been in contact. We've traded CDs. And I'm a big fan. The guy's a wildly talented musician. And when I was in the South last year, I took a little pilgrimage to his house in Wilmington, North Carolina. And the guy opened his home to me. And he played music all night. And we drank and talked. And I'm a huge fan of his music. And you soon will be as well. And the guy's just got a golden glowing heart. And you're going to enjoy it.
Lizzie's shopping for some red shoes, something new and something bright. Says she feels a bit upside down right now, and says she feels a bit uptight. She said it's hard when you open up to just letting go, and when you do let go, it's hard to stop, and you've got to find a balance between the two. And that's what I'm looking for in my new red shoes. That's what I'm looking for, something completely new. She said it's not all fun and games in this world of mine, and I'm an iceberg breaking off one piece at a time. But it's really not that bad when I start to shine, and I'm amazed at what little color can do. I'm amazed at what little color can do.
So them blues.
Does it bother you that I'm number one when you Google Tom Rhodes?
No, not at all. In fact,
Well, you're like, who the hell is this comedian guy?
If I ever Google Tom Rhodes and anything comes up, I'm like, yeah, go us. It's kind of a team, you know. You could be teamy on that stuff. No, I think that you know, there's it's rare where you see two people with the exact same name in different circumstances doing something where they're both marginally successful. Well, you're much more successful than I am, but I mean where we would both come up on the same screen.
Right.
A lot of times, if you know, I don't do a lot of name Googling, but if you were to like Google Jeff Bridges, you would probably have 5,000 pages of Jeff Bridges, the actor. And like, there'd be one guy who's like, hey, I'm Jeff Bridges.
I'm Jeff Bridges, the car mechanic. Painter.
That's
or
right.
Something.
I own a shop down here in Charleston.
Yeah, but I actually, I'm superstitious about a lot of things in entertainment, and I never Googled myself until a few years ago. And that's actually how I learned about you. I saw you were like, you were second down after me.
Nice.
And there's Tom Rhodes Real Estate in Dallas, and I think he's number three. And I have an interesting story about Tom Rhodes in Dallas.
You know,
we'll get to later. But that's and then I found you on MySpace when MySpace was still popular. Now even child molesters don't use MySpace.
It's for the best.
And that's where I wrote to you, and then you wrote me back, and that's how we got in touch.
Yeah, it's weird when you start getting into the Googling universe, amazing things happen. I'm the same way where, you know. I never had any inclination. I didn't even know that you could Google yourself in that way. You know, like type in your name and something would happen. And I was always thought it was like, how do you find the best porn with midgets in it? And then, you know, one day I was like, maybe I could find myself. it's cool. And then you find this whole world opens up. See, I'd heard about you before I had started a career, or probably right when I was starting a career is when I became aware of there was this other Tom Rhodes out there. And then I've had these discussions with my friends as well, which you might have had. Like, can there be only one? Like, what do you do? What do you do when you're both the same? And then you're like, well, you just do your thing, you know?
Pretty powerful name. I mean, that guy, Michael Jackson, the sportscaster, he's had a great career. I mean, what a, you know, terrible name to have. I mean, Michael Jackson.
That's kind
I mean,
of a rough one
imagine having that burden, you know?
Yeah, or Adolf Hitler would be like, yeah, well, kind of like, you know, get stuck with. You don't, you know, what are you going to do? And, you know, and the thing is that in it, there, I've found camaraderie. Like, I meet people with the same last name or the same names.
I've got a real weird thing with my name. Like, I'm really proud of the Rhodes name. And you mentioned the Colossus of Rhodes, which is on the island of Rhodes in Greece.
Yeah.
Have you ever been there?
No.
Because I actually went there. I went to the island of Rhodes because
right.
it's got my name on it.
Yeah.
And in Rhodes City, at the entrance of Rhodes Harbor, where the Colossus of Rhodes once stood, I swam naked the length of the harbor and back just in case it would give me any superpowers. Like, if it made my dick bigger, made my jokes funnier. I mean, like, just that, come on, vortex of Rhodes energy. And I actually had to wait until like 3 o'clock in the morning until these teenage kids on mopeds finally left. And I was kind of, I sat there and I drank, I got there about midnight. It was an idea I had while I was there. I went by myself and I drank a six pack waiting. And then, going across was no problem, but coming back, I'm not a strong swimmer, and I was doggy paddling, and I actually was thinking, God, this is going to be my Jeff Buckley in the Mississippi River moment, you know? But fortunately, I made it, and...
Well, if anyone tells you there's a chance that if you do something, your dick will get bigger, you're going to do it. I mean, anybody in their right mind is.
Yeah, but I mean, the name, I mean, well, I would have gone to Zimbabwe but when it was still Rhodesia, you know.
Well, it's amazing that you have those ability, you know, the ability to go do all that stuff. I mean, it's funny. I talk to, you know, my friends who are like, I'm Irish. And I'm like, oh, you were born in Ireland. No, well, you know, my last name's O'Malley. Okay, well, so you're Irish. You were born in America, aren't you? Aren't you kind of American?
No, yeah, right. Irish. Yeah, and people in Ireland make fun of Americans that go over there going, I'm quarter Irish.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Who cares? You know, it's about where you are, or, you know, like where you're from kind of thing.
But Americans aren't the only ones who do it. Australians do it.
Everyone
and
does,
Canadians
of everyone
Irish. Everybody wants to be a little Irish.
Well, yeah. Irish is the, that's like the rock star one, I guess. Nobody wants to be from South Africa, really. That's not one that you've. It's kind of a negative history there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well,
and Cecil Rhodes,
dude,
who we might both of us be related to. I don't. Who knows? Who you and I might be related. Who knows? But he actually plundered Africa, the diamond mines, and you know, he did some pretty abominable things in Africa to the Africans, and that's our namesake. So.
Wow.
But he was a pretty cool guy. I mean, he did a lot of big things for development, I guess. Well, the Queen was afraid of him.
You know, if you go back and you research your name or any of those kind of things, the stuff that comes up, it's hard because part of you wants to associate it with, you know, everybody wants to, like, say in their past life, women want to be Cleopatra.
Yeah, right. They were always Cleopatra.
Be,
right. It was never, you know,
men
I was a bar wench.
Right. I mean, everybody, you know, you want to associate with it. I, you know, for me, it's... I look back like 1, 2, 3 generations. Like, my granddad was a oil man, and, you know, worked, not an oil man the rich way, but like worked on the oil dikes out in Oklahoma.
And he was a Rhodes.
You know, it's like.
And your dad is from Texarkana.
Yeah.
And what's your dad's name?
Raymond.
Raymond Rhodes. Ray Rhodes. That's strong. That's good. What's your mother's name?
Joe. She's a Barnes. Joella Barnes.
But have you had that? Have you had that overwhelming pride about your name? I mean, I've always, you know, I thought it was cool there was a musician named Tom Rhodes.
I never really think about it. It's just sort of like, you know, you have a name, and what do you know? But you know, you look back. It's the same thing, you know. It's hard to.
Come on, like there was that running back for Indianapolis a few years ago, and his last name was Rhodes. So I was I was that guy's biggest fan.
Yeah, when you
I'm
play,
your biggest
when you
fan
play, when you play video
because you
games,
got the same last
right,
name
yeah,
as me. I want you to kick
like,
all the ass you can in the music business.
Well, yeah, I agree with you that way. I mean, I think you see it and you feel good, but it's I don't know. For me, it's you know, you're. You're lucky if you can do anything yourself. I'd like people to look back in 100 years and say, yeah, I was that, you know, the musician Tom Rhodes, you know, or the comedian Tom Rhodes. Like, I have a hard time associating myself with people I've never met in that way. But I know what you mean. Like, I know what you mean. You have a pride in yourself and your name and you,
yeah, like, I was in, England years ago. As far as I know, Rhodes is a very English name. And that's the origin as far as I know. And I was in London on Charing Cross Road. There's all these bookstores. And I found a book and it was The Origin of English Names.
Oh, cool.
And I looked up Rhodes. Uh-huh. And any Rhodes variation, whether or not it's has an H or an A in it or no H, the people who took the name Rhodes were people who either lived beside the road or worked beside the road.
Oh, really?
And, you know, there's just some things you wish you never knew. I was like, no, that can't be where it, least, no, it's least, way cooler than that. Come on, not, fuck that book.
At least we're not shitters or something. Like,
yeah, the guys are shit eaters. The shit eater people.
I live high, just like the birds. Stay cool as the cool breeze blows you in my. The grace she sways, I see a way. So we swing, don't fall too fast. Watch the way our summer's past. Just relax, cause you don't control what we find. Takes us up again. Like a lion to the day, and I will lay you down like the day, like the sand to the wave. Caught me loose, I float away. Say, ooh, ooh, you just run till you're out of breath. A few steps around or gaze out of you, you from up above, look out, so I don't get lost. Can we fly while we're holding hands? Will it be like the sandy air? Sink or swim, will we have to choose? I don't mind if it's win or lose, yeah. Like a lion to the day, I will lay you down like the day, like the sands to the waves. Put me loose, I float away. Sand, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like a bird up in the storms, I get high. I can't get my point across. I'm high, my feet on the ground. I get high when you're around. Yeah, 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 yeah. It's like a lion to the day. And I will lay you down like the day. Like a sand. Wave, caught me loose, I'll float away.
get into music? I mean, you told me that you wanted to be a comedian, actually, when you were younger.
Yeah. Well, I grew up a semi-only child. Where
how many siblings do you have?
Well, I have a brother, but he's my half brother, but he's 10, 11 years older than me.
So you didn't really bond and hang out.
Well, we did, but in a very different way, in a like 15-year-old, 5-year-old kind of way.
Right.
I was a little kid, and he was kind of moving on, and I grew up, you know, the center of attention and wanting that, and I grew up in a very musical household. You know, my mom was a musician.
What did she play?
She plays a lot of stuff. My mom plays piano and guitar and oboe and clarinet and woodwinds and stuff. And she
was also a photographer, you said.
She was a photographer.
Your mom sounds like a wonderful woman.
She used to book the Houston Coliseum back when she was in school down in Houston and booked the Rolling Stones and Michael Jackson on his first tour when he left the Jackson 5. I mean, she, you know, my family and my dad was deeply embedded in the music scene down in Texas and running around down there, and it's kind of like, I don't know that's destined. I don't know if there's any such thing as a destiny, but it was, I had all the makings for it. And so it was like, what are you going to do? You know, I was like, what am I going to do? And I was doing fine art a lot as a young kid. I did a lot of painting and drawing and sculpture and that sort of stuff. I was really into it. And I worked, that was what I was doing through high school. I was playing music and doing that. And I wanted to perform. I mean, I wanted to find some way to, I found this complete lacking in making a piece of art and then leaving it and walking away and there's no feedback. You don't ever know what that touches, kind of thing. And I wanted to, you know, that instant gratification. And so wound up, you know, playing music. And I had an encouraging family. So from the time I started playing professionally when I was 16, I mean, I've been,
wow. And that's early. I started being a comedian when I was 17. And I mean, you were like kind of bashful about using the word destiny, but I think there is such a thing because, I always say I didn't choose comedy. Comedy chose me.
Well,
if you look at my life, like my dad had comedy albums and just, it was something that was really worshipped in my household, stand up comedy. And everybody's a wise ass in my family and funny. It was just, you know, it was natural.
All my family are hardcore Christians, and they're all overweight, and they're all trying to lose weight on these low-carb diets where you don't eat bread. That's funny. Christians not eating bread. And Jesus said, take this bread and eat it. It is my body. And the disciples said, Jesus, we're all on low-carb diets. We appreciate you dying for our sins, but we're all trying to slim down a little bit. We want to look good in the painting.
I kind of had that as well. Like, I grew up with listening to George Carlin records with my dad. And when I was a kid, when I was way too young that most people would consider, I think I was fine. But we grew up watching Cheech and Chong and listening to Cheech and Chong records you know, Richard Pryor albums. And, you know, I would wait, you know, my dad would wait for my mom to go to bed and put on Eddie Murphy's Raw or Robin Williams.
You sound like he had the same childhood as I did. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like, I grew up in that. And you said, well, you were thinking about being a comedian. I've been at certain points where when I perform, my music is not very funny in itself. I'm not, you know, that's a side of me, you know.
Yeah, I don't want my musicians to be funny. I mean, right. You know, if, right. You know, if it's Ray Stevens... Yeah. Only call it the streak, or, you know, Weird Al Yankovic, you know.
Well, but, you know, there's a place for it, but that's not where I get my quick emotional reaction. But in the meantime, I would be funny. I would say stuff when I would be performing, or I would do stuff, and people are like, "Man, you should do stand up." So I was thinking about it real hard, and I told, you know, I was talking about the story earlier. My friend Alex was up in New York, and he's like, you know. He was a stand-up comedian for a long time, and he was one of the, for every one that makes it, it's just like music, there's probably 5,000 people who think they're stand-up comedians who can't cut it. I mean, it's a tough
But this job. Guy really helped you out in New York City a lot.
Yeah.
And in your career.
Musically stuff. Yeah. And, well, both ways. Oh, you know, he's a great
So player. He was a stand-up, and then what does he do in Brooklyn?
Well, he runs the Brooklyn Country Music Festival, which is one of the things, the Johnny Cash birthday bash. He plays in a band called the Whiskey Rebellion. His name's Alex Battles. And he works a day job licensing music for TV shows and He does sort of the paperwork side of it. And you know, he's helped me out fantastically in my career and a lot of stuff. And anyway, we were doing shows and there was this sort of environment going around, and I was the funny musician when I was not playing music. So I was like, I should go do it on stage. And he was like, no, that's not really what you want,
And he's a guy who didn't make it as a comedian.
Right. And he,
but, so what did he tell you?
Well, okay. Well, he said, he's like, Tom, I got to get my Alex voice. And he's like, Tom, you're a rock star. And that's about three steps up the totem pole from stand-up comedian.
I agree. Yeah. Well, and then if you have a hit as a song, you can play that forever. You know, you could do state fairs and casinos in Louisiana, Mississippi.
But what a horrible life.
I mean, like,
life.
As a comedian, you have to do, you know, people don't want to hear the same joke 20 years from now that you were telling 20 years
right,
ago.
Right, but the horrible, well, maybe.
And so I think that's where musicians have the benefit, where, like, man, you get a couple of good numbers.
If you're talking about making a lot of money, you could, the money.
Just surviving as a touring person.
Yeah, if I'm playing some song I wrote when I was 17, when I'm 45, I'll probably not be very happy with myself.
Well, that's what the Stones said. They always asked the Rolling Stones, you know, when you're 60, do you still want to be singing Satisfaction? And, you know, if you read those old interviews with them, they were always like, no. But, you know, look, they, you know, played in Rio de Janeiro for 1.2 million people. They sang that, they closed with it.
I have,
and they're all in their 60s now.
Personally, I have a huge beef with that. I think that musicians that have reached that upper echelon, I mean the above the upper echelon, Paul McCartney, you know, Rolling Stones, these guys, what the fuck are they doing playing shows for $300 a pop? Going around.
Yeah, those ticket prices are ridiculous. Well, my first concert was the Rolling Stones, and I mean it was a pricey ticket in 1981, but it was $50. I think unless it's the first 10-20 rows, it shouldn't be more than $50.
Right, of course.
and those ridiculous tours where they want Madonna and the Jacksons, where they wanted, you know,
yeah,
over 500 and 1,000 for a ticket. That's ridiculous.
If you're playing, like, I was in Brooklyn. I was living up in New York playing music. And on any given night, you're competing against Willie Nelson or the Rolling Stones or whoever the frig is in Madison Square Garden. And, you know, you're trying to get your friends to come out and your friends want to go do this and that. And then you go to other places in the United States. And especially in these times, people have a finite budget.
And man, the people want their fucking money's worth now.
That's right. Well, they go, if I spend $300 on a Rolling Stone ticket, or if I pay $400 to see Paul McCartney, I can't go spend $15 to see the dude down the road. And people don't do it. And so the money piles up at the top. And you know, there's a saying that makes so much sense.
I don't know. I think a lot of people are like you and I. Like, you know, fuck. I mean, I love the Stones, but I've seen them 9 times. And I wouldn't pay $300 for it. Only a corporate sponsor or a bank, you know, whining and dining their clients could afford that kind of thing.
I think
most people, because of the times now, you know, they're on a tighter budget and they are more skeptical and demanding about, you know, the tickets that they're paying for. Whereas for the longest time in America, I think we overpaid for mediocrity in every form.
Of course. If you're going to play a show for $300... do something for the community that you're sucking that money out of when you're doing it. I mean, I think that I'm not a communist in that way. Like, I am a capitalist in a lot of ways, and I would say
I'm a capitalist, but communism is very Christ-like in every way. I mean, if it
could,
everybody
work,
takes care of each other. Actually, socialism would be more accurately Christ-like.
But if you come to an area and you do that kind of show, it really does. It does, as from a musician standpoint.
You should give to the local YMCA and UNICEF.
Right? No. Well, maybe yeah. Something. I was afraid. You know, I don't know that you have a responsibility, and I'm not going to say Paul McCartney has to do this, or the Eagles have to do this.
What's your favorite Paul McCartney song?
Just Paul McCartney. Well, yeah, my favorite Paul McCartney song, well,
Wings
is tougher. My favorite one that he sings is the Beatles song, Golden Slumbers.
Golden Slumbers is my favorite Beatles song.
Yeah, I mean,
Golden Slumbers, you're playing with my clit now, Tom Rhodes. Golden Slumbers is, and it's only minute and 38 seconds.
Yeah. And the reason why I love that song is because when Paul McCartney's singing on that, if you go back and listen, he starts off very gentle, very, very reserved, and then by the end he is singing his freaking nuts off. You hear his all the tension coming out, and that's, you know, that's gorgeous stuff. And
Golden slumbers fill your eyes.
Yeah, I'm not taking anything.
Smiles await you when you rise.
Sleep, little darling.
Please don't cry, and I will sing a lullaby. I love that piece of music.
Well, and
I was in Key West years ago, and there was a street musician playing that on acoustic. I'm walking on the street, and I swear to God, I emptied my pockets. I don't know, I had 60 some odd dollars, but I was like, dude, that's my favorite song ever.
But that's,
take it all.
But that's exactly what I'm talking about. If you're in a town and you're playing and you see something that moves you, put some money on it. People, you know, there's a culture that's coming around right now where people want stuff for free. Everybody wants everything for free. I'm sure people are going to be listening to this for free. Or, you know, people want stuff and they want it for free. Okay, fine. You want something for free. How are you going to sustain it? How does that continue? And then you have this other culture that has its grip on the money, and they're saying, we got the money.
Yeah.
You want to get to it, you got to come to us. So you have these two things where people want something for, I don't want to get too into it, but
please.
Well, I'm just saying that I think like these big acts, these huge, huge acts, Madonna, whoever it is, and all musicianship aside or any kind of discussion about the music aside, I think they're overcharging and I think they're gouging, and I'm not down with that. I mean, if I was
absolutely, well, I mean, I don't have much sympathy for the, I mean, and we can talk about this also, that the record industry, I've always been a music purchaser since I was a child. I love music. First piece of music I ever bought was the Rolling Stones' "Miss You," the 45. I lived in Wilmington at the time,
yeah,
and then, like, you know, I bought cassettes. I still have my,
that was great.
In milk crates. I've got my massive cassette collection, and then I have a massive CD collection, and I've always enjoyed independent record stores and going into record stores and like dropping $100, buying new music, and then listening to it. But you know, like, CDs got to be like $20 each, and now you can buy, you know, on iTunes $9.99. You get the whole music without the packaging and the, you know, it's more accessible and cheaper.
I think that's fantastic. I think iTunes is great. I'm all for iTunes, Amazon, Amy Street or whatever. All these sites that sell music. Put something towards it. My problem, and I'm not even against, you know, I understand. I completely understand the idea of let's download something for free. Why would I pay for it? It's free. What the fuck am I doing? I understand that. But if you really love something, put something back. Give something to it. And with art, it's more important than anything else for me. I mean, it's not just music. It's not just comedy. It's fine art, painting, or you know, if you see a piece of art that's fantastic, and even if you can't afford it, you know, drop a comment on the artist's website or do something like that. Just give something back, because
With your good words.
Right. All artists are trying to do is give you themselves.
Yeah.
That's all we're trying to do is be like, here's me. Do you like it? Does it affect you? Does it make you feel good? Does it make you feel like you want to punch me in the face? I don't know. Does it make you do something? And if it does make you do something and you like what it makes you do, thank you. That's all I'm looking for. You know, whether it's however you're expressing yourself, and the only way you can give back is that, you know, if you don't have money, don't give money. If you got money, man, give it up, help it out. And I've always had that same thing. When I go to New York and I'm hanging out and I'm walking through the subways and I see somebody playing,
oh, absolutely,
I always give them money.
Yeah,
always. And I've been there. I've been on the subways playing because I didn't have any fucking money for rent, and I
really
had to get, oh yeah.
I'd like to talk to you about that. Let's take a break for 1 second, okay? Yeah.
You gotta be careful what you tell old people, man. I was with a friend of mine, and his mother asked us, what does LOL mean? And we were just messing around with her, and we told her it means lots of love. And then her mother died, and she wrote on her Facebook, "My mother died yesterday. LOL." What an exciting time to be alive, man. Technology's incredible now. A friend of mine has the new iPhone. And he showed me on his iPhone, he's got pictures of his girlfriend. He's got close-ups of her cooking. Pictures of her blowing him. And I'm like, wow, you can do so many things with those. I've got to get a girlfriend.
All right, let's talk about Wilmington. How did you end up in Wilmington? Because it's funny, you're from Texas, but you went to D.C. when you were how old?
Like 4 or 5.
And I was born in D.C., lived there till I was like 10. And then my family moved to Wilmington, North Carolina for a couple years. And then we moved to Florida when I was like 12.
Yeah.
So it's weird that you went to D.C. and then Wilmington.
Well, I came to Wilmington from Brooklyn. And Brooklyn was, I didn't think I'd ever leave New York. I guess I figured I'd leave, but I didn't know. And you know, women change your life in miraculous ways sometimes.
Amen, brother.
I've been a staunch.
Every thug needs a lady.
That's right. I've always been like staunch anti-marriage. In fact, you know, I've always thought that marriage is kind of an unattainable fucking thing. And you know, the idea of being with someone for the rest of your life. And then one day someone hits you in the face with a hammer and she's beautiful and you go, all right, I'm cool with that. And so I met my now, who's my wife, Morgan. I met her, online and not on a dating site, but
you met her on MySpace.
Yeah. On MySpace, which was, it was,
and I met you on MySpace.
MySpace has been good to me. Yeah. I thought it was good. Better than
Facebook. I wrote to you on MySpace.
Yeah. Well,
and then you said your wife wrote to you on MySpace.
Yeah. You know, one of the amazing things about technology now is that you don't have to know someone to get to know someone.
To reach out to them. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, and it's such a, different people have, you know, different personalities, and some personalities are they don't want to meet anybody else. Some people do. And I've always been the kind of guy where if I'd love to meet people. I think people are great, you know, like
that's the way I feel. Yeah, and that's like, why I'm here. Cause I mean, I actually, you know, I told you, I saw you on the Google thing, and then I read your story, and you had moved to New York. I moved to New York when I was 20,
yeah,
trying to make it as a comedian. I'm like, oh, there's a guy. He's a, and it's, and then you and I wrote to you and we exchanged CDs. And, you know, from listening to your music and reading your story, you seem like a guy like me. You're a seeker.
Yeah.
You know, you're a truth seeker. You're looking for, you know, art and creativity and, you know, to experience life.
We're trying to blaze some kind of trail that other people can hopefully move down in the future that will be less stupid.
So how was New York? So how was New York for you? Because I moved to New York when I was 20 and it was a disaster.
Well,
so you loved Brooklyn?
No, I hated Brooklyn until I got there. I never wanted to live in the city.
And you told me you were a vegan living in Brooklyn. And my favorite thing about Brooklyn is all the Jamaican chicken joints.
Yeah. Oh, and Jamaican patties. The spicy patties.
The spicy chicken.
I wasn't completely vegan. I was I ate fish and eggs occasionally, but I had given up milk. And then I said given up. I didn't want milk anymore. And then I was like, Can I go without meat? And it was kind of like, you know, you gotta push yourself in different ways as you go through life. And I was trying to push every freaking border I could. And moving to New York, I'd lived on farms and out in the country. That's where I find myself at home. I like peeing outside. I like seeing the stars. I like, you know, screaming at the top of my lungs at 3 a.m. And I thought cities were the absolute antithesis to what I wanted.
And oh yeah, you can pee outside and yell at the top of your lungs.
That's
in
what
Brooklyn.
I found out. Totally. My friend Jake was like, hey man, come on up to New York. I got a place up there. Come move up. And I moved up, and I found out that you have just as much anonymity amongst 8 million people that you do amongst 10 people or no people. Or people leave you alone, and you can do what you want. And once I got over my initial, you know, trepidations of getting up there and involving myself in this dangerous, I'm making air quotes here, this dangerous environment. I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, and it's amazing. And when you get in a place like New York, or you get in these big cities where people have brains and other people are pushing those borders. Everyone in New York that I was hanging out with wasn't from New York. They were from somewhere else, and they were all seeking the same thing I was seeking. And you start to, your horizon expands exponentially when you get in those situations. And yeah, you know, New York was fantastic. It wasn't easy. Nothing is easy. That's good. So, you know, it wasn't easy, but it was
fun. Was it a creative time for you? Do you think you like pumped out a lot of tunes?
Amazing.
Because like when I was 20, I had the most suffering period of my life, but it did actually, you know, inspire a lot of jokes and things. So,
well, not just writing, but learning. You know, I grew up playing cover tunes and playing in bars, and I was always writing original stuff, but it was like nobody wants to hear your original stuff in Leesburg, Virginia, or in small town USA. They want to hear Lynyrd Skynyrd or whatever the fuck they...
Well, that seems like the tough thing as a musician, because, you know, you can always make money playing in friggin' Holiday Inn lounges doing like a cover act. But to like break out with your own material seems like, you know, where do you find those venues?
Right. I had this discussion last night. We were talking about this, is that, you know, there's a market for that and there's a need for that. And you know, there's something good in it too, but there's also... You know, when you get tired of that, when you want to move on, where do you go? When you reach the top of what you can do in small town USA, you got to go to where it is. And if you don't leave, you starve. Your brain shrivels and dies, and you shop at Walmart for the rest of your life. And you know, shopping at Walmart's fine, but you know, if you want
to, you don't get to pee in Brooklyn and yell at the top of your lungs.
Yeah, if you want to find quality art in your life, you got to go to where it is. And if you want to be inspired, you got to go to where it's happening.
Now, how much do you actually tour, or do you just play like certain places? Like, I know you're in with, you know, New York clubs, and I mean, what is your circuit?
Well, now it's a lot smaller than it used to be. I've actually slowed down quite a bit since I came to Wilmington, and I've got the bug in my butt right now, and I'm trying to start it back up. I mean, my circuit before was wherever it took me. I mean, I've always kind of been floating on the breeze, and you know, I've done tours all over the U.S. and over in Ireland, and you know, north, south, and east and west, and gone all over playing music. Music will take you everywhere in the world. I mean, that's what's great about it, and that's what's great about any kind of art, is art will take you wherever it goes. But lately, I haven't been doing a lot for touring stuff. I've been playing here in Wilmington, writing a lot, and now I'm back into trying to work. You know, start back in the Southeast and move around and use the connections. I mean, when you play around as much as I've done, you make a lot of connections around, and the people you meet want to do stuff, and you get back out and around.
So you think like being married, one you've inspired to travel less?
I don't think it's married. That's one of the you know, those questions, what came first, the chicken or the egg? I think I'd beat my head against a wall for a long time, and I was kind of burnt out on the...
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing I wanted to... Because that's the one thing I wanted to ask you. I was curious about how much you traveled and worked, because it's my bread and butter, and I've been on the road since I graduated high school, and I've always thought it was really interesting that my life has been perpetual motion since I was 18, and I'm just always traveling. My last name is Rhodes, for fuck's sake. I'm always traveling.
Those who live by
my last name is Rhodes. So I didn't know if you had the same, I don't want to call it an affliction or an illness, but I mean, it's the rambling fever.
Yeah. I kind of get into whatever I'm doing at the moment, and I kind of throw myself into it. And when I'm out touring and when I'm out on the road, I'm so into it. It's so much fun. And then sometimes when I'm at home, I'm really into just being at home and being comfortable. And there's times when you get into writing and it's all you can think about. And there's times when you get into performing and it's all you can think about. And there's this ebb and flow throughout your, I don't want to say your career, but through your life. And that stuff takes you where it's going to go. And you know,
what's your turnover for new material? Like, how many, you've made two or three CDs, right?
I've got two. I'm working on a third.
And, yeah. So, you know, what's the turnover? I mean, how long have you been a musician? And, you know, I think for me as a comedian, it takes, I've made two CDs. I'm working on my third. And my cycle's been about it takes about 5 years to come up with a new hour.
Oh.
Where you're getting rid of old stuff you're tired of playing or doing. And that's, so I don't know what, for, you know, a musician like yourself, what's the, you know, some gifted musicians are banging out tunes all the time and it's nothing.
Yeah. If I had a budget that was not even unlimited, I could do, you know, if I had a big budget, I could record constantly. I mean, writing is not the hard part. For a musician, the hard part is getting it right. And then getting out and feeling real comfortable with it and playing it. You know, it's different too in that I don't have to rewrite my act to add a new song. A new song is 3 minutes or whatever it is, you know, and you can go out and you can try it out and play it. And if it feels good, you can play it from then on, or you can take it or you can leave it. And every night, you know, I don't have to put together an hour. I only have to put together the next second that's in front of me and then play that song. And then the next song is a whole new thing. And when you're playing out, you get to, you know, I think that that's kind of one of the things we were talking earlier about, you know, doing stand up or doing music. For me, one of the great things about doing music is that I can just go and play whatever I want, whenever I want. I'm the boss of me, and I don't have to worry about it working with the next thing I'm doing or setting up something, or, you know, that much thought doesn't really have to go into it. A lot of people do put that much thought into it, and I just don't have that much concentration, but I can get by without it. And that's works great for me. The turnover, you know, like how many songs, I can't begin to tell you how many songs, tons of songs, hundreds of songs.
But I mean, you know, like making a painting, I mean, there's certain, like, you know, making a film, making an album, writing a book, you know, there's certain little things that we leave behind as artists, you know, that is, you know, it's really what that you have to leave behind in life is the art that you make. So I mean, I'm curious, like, you know, how long does it take you to come up with a whole new album?
Not long.
Because I know, and also, you know, the thing they say, musicians, you know, you get 15 years to come up with your first album and then six months to come up with a second. True. So,
well, it depends on, you know, I'm not a major label guy, so I've done self-finance the whole time. So everything I do is on my own timetable. You know, my first record came out, and then I put out in 2004, I put out another record 2 years later, and it's been 4 years since that. Now, I've been writing, and I've had plenty of music to put out another record since then, but it's difficult to pay for it, because making a record for a musician requires a lot of time and finance. You have to go into a studio. It's not as expensive as it used to be, but you have to get musicians. You have to hire all these people, and you have to do all these things. And part of it is that it becomes overwhelming and you don't actually get around to it. And part of it is that it's, you know, cost prohibitive in some ways. If you have to come up with $15,000 to make a record and you're making $20,000 a year playing music.
Well, and I know a lot of musicians too that have, you know, been in that, you know, guys trying to pull it together, and guys with great songs, and certain musicians are unreliable from certain bad habits, or just, you know.
I
was friends with a guy who was a genius, and he just, you know, drank himself into oblivion.
I don't really fall into those traps. I mean, I'm more of a self-sustained musician in some of those ways, and that I can play a lot of different instruments. So when I go in the studio, I can do a lot of stuff on my own. For me, it's most of the thing that's been holding me back. It's not holding me back. But the thing that's been my biggest obstacle has been gathering the money together to go in and record these records and record these songs. Sometimes you have a song and you don't have a record, but that song needs to get down. You're like, I got to get this down. And then how do you do that? You know, and if you don't have somebody paying for it, what do you do? You know, you do the best you can with what you got. And what I do is I play it out, and I play a lot of shows. People who come out to my shows get to hear my, you know, stuff I might have written 2 hours earlier, I'll go out and play at a show. And for me, that's the juice for me. That's where I feel my best, is when I'm like right on that edge of this is brand new and it's really raw emotionally and all that stuff. I love that. I love, you know, going out and just starting from scratch and making it work.
What do you think is the best song that you've ever written?
Who knows? My favorite song or the best song I've written?
I don't know. I just think it's an interesting question, and I never thought of such a thing. A cousin of mine, I saw him about 4 or 5 months ago, and he asked me, what do you think is the best joke you ever wrote? Uh-huh. And I was like, wow, I never thought of it. And then I, you know, thought of, yeah,
there's a few
one that I think, wow, that really nailed my intelligence, what my message, my fucking, you know, aura and trying to deliver the God power gift that's been given me.
I got a couple I would put in that category. One was, I had a really good conversation last night, so I talked about a lot of stuff, but I was talking about a song last night. It's called One Bright Pearl. Yeah, it's on the last record. I dig that song. I don't like the way it was recorded, but I really like the song. And you know, that one, like Breathe, the songs that where I'm touching on my life view sort of things, I think those are the ones where you said, what's your best stuff? That'd probably be the stuff I would say is my best stuff. Now, other people might not say the same thing.
The other song you were saying?
Well, one is called, it's called Breathe. It's on the same record, but you know, there's some of the songs I go back and listen to them and I think they're great when I write them, and I go back and listen, I'm like, that sucks. But those are the songs that people request when I go and play out. Is that your best one because people like it, or is it your best one because you like it?
Yeah.
You know, I'm more into pleasing myself, really. You know, when I go out and play, I'm playing stuff that I dig, and you know, some of the songs on my new record that I'm working on, there's a song called My World on there. I love that song. I think it's about, you know, it's up there with as good as I can do on stuff, and I like it, but will it sell or will it be successful? I don't know. You know, I really don't know.
And that's another thing I'm curious about you is, you know, I mean, are you making a living as a musician? Yeah. That's all you do?
That's all I do.
And I'm proud of you for that because, you know, you like I, you make a living from your talent and the thoughts and ideas from your brain and what you can deliver live. Wow.
Yeah, it's not easy.
So that's awesome.
I'm sure we can agree on that. It's not easy to get started on that. But once you do it for, you know, if you can develop a career just like you can start a bar, and it's going to suck for the first few years. And then once you start developing a clientele and, you know.
But that's the exciting thing, is sucking and developing and, you know,
it's exciting in retrospect.
Exactly. Oh, my God. Yeah. Eating a bag of shit on stage.
Yeah.
It's not good.
I mean, I started doing coffee shops and open mics and yeah, and that sucks. I mean, it sucks it still sucks a lot of times.
But I don't know. I actually, like, there was an open mic night last night at the beginning of my show, and I was telling the owner and my girlfriend, I actually love open mic nights because
I like them. I just don't like doing them.
I'm reminded of the freshness of it, where it's just like it's a victory just to go on stage.
Yeah.
So that's an accomplishment. And then also you're reminded of what not to do because you see, like, you know, really bad stuff.
Yeah.
And then I went on, and it was evil, and I shouldn't have said it. I said, ladies and gentlemen, a big round of applause for your open micers tonight. There was 5 open micers. I said, you know what? 2 of those guys are going to be superstars. You're going to look back years from now and you're going to go, you know what, man? I saw that guy on his first open mic night. And wow, look at him now. He's an absolute superstar. The other 3 have a long, hard road of shattered dreams
and hurt feelings.
And it was fucked up because I every one of those 5 comedians sat there going, fuck, am I one of those 3?
Right.
Am I the 2 or the 3?
He was talking about me. No, so, they all sat there and went, he's talking about me. I'm one of the 2. And that guy over there.
I'm sure musicians aren't as insecure comedians.
No, of course.
You probably everyone walks around like a god.
No,
and
musicians
all right.
are, hey, musicians are like the most, I, maybe, I, Comedians and musicians are probably pretty close on that for insecure. You see people. Well, this is what I don't like about open mics. I'll say this. I loved playing them when I was learning, and they're a great opportunity for learning. When I fell out of love with open mics is when I felt like I was a professional and I still had to play at open mics
to
get ahead.
Right.
And when you go there and this goes back to what I was getting at is that when you go out and you feel like you're killing it and nobody's getting it, you're like, what? Am I the bad one or are you the bad one? And there's like 50 of you and there's one of me, so it's probably me. And that feeling is
I had that in Hilton Head Island Wednesday and Thursday where it was old right. white rich couples. Right. I didn't and I was incredibly charming and entertaining, right. and sure I got a couple of dirty jokes that are beyond their Christian Southern sensibilities, but I was entertaining.
But this is the thing. When you reach a point in your, this is what it's about for me. When you reach a point in your art where you know you're doing the right thing, then fuck them. Yeah. You know, like you go out and you play. Like you play.
But it's easy for you to say as a musician because then you know you can just go into a guitar solo.
No.
And you know there's all kinds of ways you can hide behind your instrument. I mean, as a comedian, it's
well, I would argue that you don't get to hide behind it. You just got to fucking make it work with it. I mean, I do a lot of my shows solo acoustic, which is basically like going up with a mic and just making it happen. And there is that. You have musical interludes or you can change it. But you at some point in every performance, you go, who the fuck am I playing for? Am I playing for me or am I playing for them? And if you make the right choice on any given night, the show will go one way or the other. And not every night the right choice is to play for yourself to make the show go well. Some nights you got to play to the crowd and some nights you got to play for yourself. And it's incredibly unnerving until you get to the point where you feel that you have mastered your craft. When you feel like you're good on your craft, for me, that's where I find my comfort. Like I feel like I'm not the best songwriter or player or anything like that. I make no claims to any of those things. But I do know that I'm good at what I do because I've seen it compared to other things and I feel like I have something to offer. And when people don't respect it, you just go, okay, I don't care. You know, I'm just going to keep plugging because for every night I play where, and this is something that keeps me going, you know, keeps me able to be sane and continue to play music is, you could have 5 bad shows in a row, but that good show where everybody comes up after you, you know, after the show and it says, man, that was awesome. You sell a bunch of CDs and, you know, people want to be your friend. Man, that's, that's the drug that rock stars use drugs to try to get to. I mean, that feeling of acceptance and excellence and
excellence.
The wrong syllable.
I'm such a solid gold magic feeling. You invented a new word.
Yeah. But I mean that
excellence.
That feeling when you when you're feeling that excellence, it feels great. And you know, even on the bad nights, there's someone who comes up to you 99% of the time. It's like, man, that was great. And, you know, if I can play to one person in the room and they get it, then I feel like I'm doing good. I mean, and it's tough. There are tough times. There are shitty, 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 fuck shit shows. And you play them. But what I try to do is...
A really good friend of mine, he's a musician and he's a singer-songwriter. And he moved to Nashville about 3 years ago from L.A. And he really regrets it because he always tells me... I realize I wasn't the first person to have that idea to be a singer and songwriter and move to Nashville.
Right.
So, and I've passed through town there a few times and, the tiniest bar or like diner cafe, there's somebody, some young musician standing in the corner playing their songs. And like, wow, that, you know, be standing in a fucking,
that's me.
Mobile home sports bar in the corner.
That guy is Tom Rhodes and he is on tour right now. Yeah, you know what I try to do is I make the shitty shows pay well. and I make the good shows feel good. And if you can get to where you can make the good shows pay well, that's when you've achieved real success. And, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult because we're all seeking that not just the spiritual high, but the financial high at some point. You know, you're going, man, I'm working my ass off. I want to get paid. And
I'm still chasing that carrot.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I, you know, I'll chase
you know,
it.
Hey, you know, sooner or later, the horse has got to fucking catch the carrot.
Right. He's got to get it. Well, I had a
sooner or later, you got to.
You were asking about. I was over on a tour in Ireland. I was hanging out with a friend of mine. She's an Irish songwriter, and a couple of other friends of mine that came over from New York. And we were having a discussion, and I said, you know, I said, what's your number? And a lot of people think that means how much money do you need for me to sleep with you? But that's not what I meant. I meant like, what's your number to get the fuck out of the game? You know, this chase. And I was like, my number is probably somewhere around $3 to $5 million. If I made $3 million or $5 million, I'd stop touring. I'd stop. I would still play, but I would only play my way. I'd only make my songs my way. I'd do everything my way. I'd buy a little place out in the country. I'd piss outside. I'd scream at the moon. I'd drink till 4 a.m. And I'd be Hunter S. Thompson and J.D. Salinger wrapped up in one. And I would be having a fucking blast. But all the other musicians in the car were like, no, what are you talking about? That's stupid. If you get to the point where you're making $5 million, you can make $10 million. I was like, what the fuck is the point of $10 million? What can you buy with $10 million that I can't buy with $5 million? Or what the fuck do you need that costs more than $1 million? What do you need? Because I don't need shit. I need land and space and money to pay for me to create. That's all I want. That's all I want out of life. And we were talking about chasing that carrot. And I think for me, it helps to have that goal, to have this number where I go, if I make this number, this is real, tangible, complete success for me. And if I can get
I don't need a number. I just want to rock people. I want to fucking inspire people. And it's like,
yeah.
I heard Bob Dylan say this years ago, and I've read it in a few interviews with him or books or whatever, where he talks about going to see Buddy Holly at the Duluth National Guard Armory. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I can't explain it to you, but I stood in the front and the guy looked me in the eye and he just gave it to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I saw Bob Dylan, I've seen him a few times, and once was at the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium, which is like the size of a high school gymnasium, and I stood in the front, and he wasn't behind the piano, he had the guitar, and he was like doing these big rock kicks, mm-hmm. and the guy fucking looked me in the eye like 3 or 4 times, gave it to me.
Yeah, man.
And I mean, you know, I want to change people's lives when I'm on stage.
I'm all for it, and there's not a number, that's exactly right, there's not a number that touches that, but to get to the point where you can make that happen, you've got to be able to give it. You've got to have something.
Like guys always, like in comedy, they would say, I remember when I was younger, if I don't make it by the time I'm 30, I'm going to get out of the business. And I always love the I'm getting out of showbiz story. You know, I've heard that from so many. Like I would never even imagine.
Why?
Comedy is my oxygen. And, you know,
if you can make a living doing, I had a conversation. I used to do I had a shitty, shitty, shitty job telemarketing at one point. And I happened to be good at telemarketing for whatever fucking reason.
Hi, I'm Tom Rhodes.
Yeah. Hi, this is Tom Rhodes from Tri-State. And I did it so much that I would go to drive-thrus and I would try to order, but I would just do my spiel that I did on the phone because I did it so many times. Like, you just get ingrained. And I was really good at it. And I was making good money. I graduated high school. I was making a real good living right out of high school. I was living on my own and doing all this stuff. And my boss, I was playing music all the time and working all the time and starting to go to community college. And I was burning up. And, you know, I was dying. And my boss told me, he's like, look, man, and this is something that salesmen generally won't tell you. He said, you can do something you love and make no money and be happy for the rest of your life. Or you can do something you hate and make a shitload of money and spend all that money trying to forget that every day you get up and do something you hate.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, does that mean I should quit? And I did. And it was, it, you know, that was one of the biggest, you know, going to New York was such a small decision compared to that, because when you grow up, I don't know what your experience with Northern Virginia or the D.C. area is, but it's so money-centric and so right. job-centric, and this is the path you get on, and you follow that path, and if you get off of it, you're a loser, and if you follow it, you're a winner, and you want to be a freaking winner. And I was on that path to be a winner, and all of a sudden, I was like...
See you at Chili's.
Yeah. And then I worked at
You're in love with the suburban American. Yeah,
I worked at Ruby Tuesdays. I bartended at Fridays. I did those shitty jobs. You do these horrible things to make, you know, you're, not that it's horrible, but you do these things that are against your character to get to where you want to be. And that's the sacrifice.
Well, I mean, it's the Dylan Rimbaud artist thing, especially if you, when you want to be an artist and you grow up in a place where, you know, I couldn't wait to get out of Florida. Just to, you know.
Don't blame you.
You know, I read Kerouac's On the Road when I was in high school, and it ruined my life. I mean, I wanted adventure, and, you know, I wanted to smoke pot with, you know, jazz guys in alleys, you know? It's like, that wasn't happening in Orlando.
Jazz guys have the best weed, by the way.
They do. Yeah. And fat girls in Camaros. That's it's a joke I used to do.
Is it really?
Yeah. Jazz musicians and fat girls in Camaros always have the best weed.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's true. Jazz guys smoke good shit. Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, universal truths are hilarious.
Universal truths. I love it. But, so now, just from talking to you briefly here, I've learned that peeing outside is very important to you at any stage of the game. You've mentioned it about three times. And then you mentioned Hunter Thompson, which, do you know the quote? It's one of my favorite Hunter S. Thompson quotes, where he said, the music industry is a long hallway filled with backstabbing scumbags who only want to drain your soul or something.
Right.
And he goes, and that's the upside.
And then there's a downside. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, Hunter,
what's the quote? Do you know it?
I can't.
It's
quote
something
it
like
I know,
that. Though.
I've read it 100 times.
It's hysterical.
Times. There's another one I love. It says, "How do you make $1 million as a songwriter? And you start with $10 million." Like, this is, you know, your music industry's.
Wow.
But that's a whole. We could do a 2-hour podcast on how horrible. The music industry has been,
but you can be your own industry now with the internet,
and that's what I've done.
Technology.
My
that's why the and I think they deserve to screw themselves.
What,
you know
the way that the deals have been structured for so long, and this goes back to what I was saying before about these big artists doing these big tours, is all the money goes to the top, and the record companies have made a ton of money, and I don't hate on somebody for making a bunch of money. I don't hate on them for offering bad deals and other people taking it. If that's what you do, that's what you do. If you can go to sleep at night, more power to you. If you can't, then you might have a conscience and there might be a chance for you in life. But other than that, do what you got to do. But with that said, people don't want to hear what's forced down their throats. Real people don't want to hear that. Nobody wants to have anything forced into you. And well... I've met some women who like things forced into them. But
yeah, why are they still playing Bob Seger on FM radio? Okay, we get it. I've heard it.
Well, but
hasn't anything new happened in the last? It's like when you're in the United States, these classic rock stations. It's like
they're the biggest stations,
they're playing the same things from when I was a teenager.
Well, and if you're not hearing, you'll hear the same. I've had this.
Haven't
exact
the
experience.
Haven't the roofers and construction people ever complained? You know, hey. You know what?
Well, I've recently been listening to a classic rock station change the channel, and here's somebody doing the exact same song on a modern rock station. They've gone to the point where they can't even. They're not only just playing the old stuff; they're having new people play the old stuff because they can't think of anything new to do.
What about? I know because I'm completely out of touch with the South, but there was an explosive period in the 80s when I went on the road, man, where all kinds of great Southern shit was happening. REM,
oh, yeah, yeah,
and Driving and Crying out of Atlanta.
Wilmington used to be a big music
and like
country.
College radio in the South fueled all that. So yeah. I mean, is there still the Southern college station hipster? We can fucking
no,
no,
not at all.
No.
Well, yeah. No, not in the way it was. It's not the same scene that did fuel that. What's happening now is...
Here comes some Husker Du.
Yeah. No, you don't have that now. What you have is a different sort of thing. You have DIY musicians that are going around, and they're making their support not on the radio. They're making it on live shows on the internet. And so you don't have these college stations pumping out a lot of live new music. Wilmington is kind of a cool town. One of the things I like about, there's a cool independent music station here in town that does live art from, you know, musicians, and they play alternative stuff. You'll hear, you know, Bon Iver and stuff like that played on the radio where you're not going to hear it anywhere else. There's around the nation, there's some places that have those, but it's not like it used to be where you would have 20,000 people every day listening to one radio station in a small town that played independent music. It's just not the call for it. They don't play it in the bar when you go in. They're not playing it in the restaurant when you walk in. They're playing
cool
their CD or whatever.
Well, I'm glad you steered it in that direction. Let's talk about Wilmington for a minute, because I have a connection to Wilmington because I lived here when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I've been back, you know, a handful of times. I really think it's one of the most charming places in the United States.
Did you see our bridge?
I've been over the bridge. Yeah.
We have a nice bridge there.
It's lovely. No, and the waterfront is beautiful. I've done a joke about that. I boxed once when I was a kid, and it's a true story. I lived here in 1978 and 79, and Rocky was a big hit, and me and my brother decided we could be the heavyweight champions of the world, and we joined a gym, a boxing gym, and it was downtown Wilmington, and I'd have to go run a couple of miles every day when you're training.
Punch me.
And I'd run around the downtown, and I had one fight, and I actually came in second. I lost.
Yeah.
And my father filmed it, and I made a joke out of that. You know, my dad filmed it, and anyway, but it was funny because they had the boxing, it was junior gold gloves, and Wilmington, I don't know if they still do, they had an Azalea Festival.
Every year.
Okay, it's still big? So it was the Azalea Festival. I just always thought it was interesting that a flower show had boxing. So does the Azalea Festival still have children beating the shit out of each other?
Yeah, but it's not sanctioned anymore. Now it's just on street corners and right up front of it.
Okay, and then the other thing we talked about earlier, that it was a little fact that I didn't know that my oldest brother told me, that the Venus flytrap is indigenous to the Wilmington area, a little 30-mile radius.
It's a little bigger than that, but yeah.
And I thought it was from, I bet my brother like 50 bucks at Christmas that he was wrong. I thought it was South American or Asian. But because the tobacco, they didn't, you know, they had the tobacco farming, they didn't alternate crops or something. The only way the plants could get nitrates was from the bugs. So that's interesting that the Venus flytrap developed...
Because of the tobacco farming in the Wilmington area. I mean, that would be way cooler than an Azalea Festival.
Oh, my God. And all the swamp, you know, in summer and the flies, it's genius.
Right. Yeah, you're like, you go to the festival. And there's no flies anywhere. They just like, they're like serving Kool-Aid in giant open containers.
That's
and there's
genius.
Nothing bugging you.
And a few other things of note, like there was a water slide part. Like my very first pair of Levi's, my dad only bought us like Sears clothes. And I remember I mowed grass in our neighborhood until I got enough. I remember riding my bike to the mall to buy my first pair of Levi's. And then also there was a water slide park here that we forgot my brother John. And he's still scarred over the fact that our family left the water slide park. And then
we left him at the park. Yeah, and we didn't realize until
like 3 hours later. And we went back and he's sitting in the parking lot, pissed. And so the other little story, really bad family. He's still trying to recover from that emotionally. But, and then the other thing is, and it's a funny story involving my brother John also. My two older brothers went to Laney High School with Michael Jordan.
Wow, I know.
And to hear my brother John tell the story is really funny. That, you know, he remembers that Michael Jordan was really charismatic, and he was always like going up to people in the halls, and you got to come to the games, and you got to come to the game. Hey, everybody, come to the game. And my brother John said he remembered thinking back then, that guy's not going to amount to anything.
Way to call it, John. So he might have made 50 bucks off of you, but you know, that was a bet he would have lost in the long run.
Well, that was my oldest brother Dave was the
bet,
the Venus flytrap.
Yeah, no, Wilmington's a cool.
So
town.
What can you tell me about Wilmington?
I like Wilmington. I like living by the beach. I bought a little fishing boat and I go out and I fish.
Oh, are you kidding me? Really?
Yeah, and I you know, I think that for me, you know, I was talking before about liking to pee outside and yell at the moon. And that's
peeing off of a boat's even better.
Fantastic. There's nothing like that real, you know, the instant gratification of sploosh. And
suffers from a socially acceptable addiction. Black coffee, no sugar, no cream. He's reading Dostoevsky and he's learning French. He said he's gonna expatriate with all his friends since Bush won the election, and he spent his teen years drinking while his parents paid the tab, because he's so hip. 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 He's so cool. He doesn't own a suit. He says he'll never cut his hair. All his credit cards say check and all his checks say cash. I'm sure I'd remember him finally if I could pick him out of a lineup. I guess he'd be the one with 1-1-2-1-1 son, written on the side of his water gun. He's so hip, 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 he's so hip.